The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day! The pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my colleague, the professor, Dave Malinsky.
Once again, the voice can't hold up till Friday. Tougher than he thought this was going to be. Coming up today, the NBA players are no longer locked out, but apparently common sense still is. Why one college basketball team is celebrating homecoming tomorrow, almost 3,000 miles from campus, and we have some new laws of gravity in place this week, involving a guy named Newton.
Well, Dave, what'd you see last night? What's your first take on a Thursday night that no college football? It was like the first. Why? There's one college football game we're going to discuss today. But bottom line is, less college football this week than there's been any week since August.
No, and we think about memories when we're not forced to be attached to any specific topic. Army Navy tomorrow, and if you're a fan of college football, the pageantry and the atmosphere around that game is something truly special. Now, one of the nice things about tomorrow's game, the pregame ceremonies are going to be picked up a lot earlier. If you've got nothing else to do, if you're sitting watching college basketball, lines move, do a little handicapping, put that on in the background. You'll see something pretty special take place. First Army-Navy memory goes back to 1971. And I remember the Sunday morning at St. Hugh's Catholic Church in Carmichael's, Pennsylvania. Everyone gathered after the ceremony talking so excitedly because Fred Stuvak, member of the parish, was the Navy quarterback. They had lost to Army by 1 point the day before. But if you remember back to the old days of the Chevrolet player of the game, Fred Stuvak was that player of the game. And I just remember that magic that we felt that Sunday morning. It's made Army-Navy a big part of my life ever since. It, largely because they also get after each other real well. These kids compete, and we appreciate what they do on and off the field for us. So if you've got nothing else going on in that pregame cycle tomorrow, tune in a little bit earlier, watch those ceremonies, something truly, truly unique. Teddy, what do you bring in here on a Friday morning?
Well, what was the name of that John Feinstein book, or John Feinstein?
A Civil War.
A Civil War, yeah, and that's another great read. Again, you're not going to do it in the middle of the season, but one of those books you might want to look for on Amazon or something, find a used copy, and it's definitely a worthwhile read when you have some time over the summer. My first take yesterday, and it's kind of like the same, I feel like I'm on a treadmill here with the first take when I talk about the AFC. You know, you watched the Steelers play again last night, and I was able to cash a ticket for myself and my clients with Cleveland plus the points. And the Browns did nothing in that ball game, literally nothing. I mean, they had the one good drive to open the game, and then an inane play call on a third and goal from the one-inch line, and then they settled for nothing worse than like the 19 or the 20-yard field. You got the dog. You're like, come on, man, punch it in. Turned out to be a difference maker, however, that 3 points. But Cleveland did nothing. And here's Pittsburgh, supposed to be the Super Bowl team, and I know Big Ben was hurt. But Big Ben moved around in the pocket in the second half. Big Ben threw the ball downfield. Pittsburgh just didn't do anything. And we've seen it before. The Steelers haven't scored more than 7 points in the second half of any game in more than a month. I think it's five straight weeks. 7 points or less in the second half. You look at the rest of the field in the AFC. You know, I look at Baltimore and say, they didn't look like a Super Bowl team to me. The Patriots, we look at their defense and how Indy moved the ball up and down the field against them in the second half of that ball game last week. And those are the three favorites in the AFC. I continue to think that, you know, you're looking for a value bet, maybe look for the NFC in the Super Bowl. I think we're going to see a dark horse coming out of the AFC this year. Maybe a Denver, maybe an Oakland. Let's not forget that Green Bay last year, on their way to the Super Bowl title, they were a wild card team who had to win the final week just to clinch their spot. I think the AFC, the value this year is in the field, not in the big three. And Pittsburgh again last night, not impressing me, really, as a legitimate threat to go back to the Super Bowl for the second straight year. So let's shift over to Market Watch, Dave. And there's so much happening right now in the NBA. We had the blockbuster deal yesterday. Decent deal for LA. Great deal for New Orleans. Terrible deal for Houston. And yet, the bottom line, the league, David Stern, under pressure from owners, saying, "Nah, you guys got to avoid that. We can't give the Lakers any more good players." Insanity in the NBA? Am I missing something?
Insanity. Training camps open today. By our counts, not even half the teams are ready for them. There's a lot of scrambling going on. We think this is going to be good for us because it means the markets are going to scramble. The odds makers have to scramble. But boy, did the NBA shoot themselves in the foot. Particularly Dan Gilbert, who apparently was the first one to protest the David Stern, who just simply didn't get it. Now, here's where part of the issue came from on the trade. Of course, the NBA collectively still owns New Orleans. And he says, well, why are we giving this superstar away? Well, first, they didn't give a superstar away. They got the best value of any of the three teams involved in the deal. It was New Orleans that got it. Because keep in mind, New Orleans right now has five players under contract. That's all. They literally could have started to rebuild their franchise by making this deal. Was it going to make the Lakers too powerful? Well, consider this. If the season opened today, and we're going to give Andrew Bynum, put him in the starting lineup, even though he's got to sit out the first five games with a suspension. Starting front court, Luke Walton, Derek Character, and Andrew Bynum. You're worried about that at this point? No, the Lakers gave away a lot. They need a point guard as they move outside of the Phil Jackson era, maybe get away from the triangle a little bit. That was not going to make them that powerful. We didn't quite understand the Houston part of it. Seemingly gave up a little bit more than they needed to for Pau Gasol. But that was actually a pretty good trade all the way around, Teddy.
Yeah, everyone for the Rockets. I mean, I don't understand why the Rockets want Pau Gasol. Frankly, he's what, a rich man's Louis Scola, you know? And then they're giving up, along with Gasol, Kevin Martin, who's, you know, I mean, maybe not a superstar. The guy's a scorer. The guy can put the biscuit in the basket. And giving up the first-round pick to go along with it? It made no sense to me. If you watched Pau Gasol last year, he looked old. He looked tired. He certainly was not hungry for another title run in L.A., you know, downside of his career, wrong side of 30. He's not a guy you're going to build around. He's not going to a guy you're going to have a title with this year in Houston. It made no sense to me. And the Rockets, of course, the Moneyball equivalent of the NBA with their ownership and management in general. That was one deal that actually had me baffling my head. And Houston, I think, and Dragic, the backup point guard. I like him coming off the bench. You know, he's a spark plug kind of a guy. The Rockets, I think, will be glad that this deal got denied. But the bottom line is, here's a commissioner, and the league owns the team, and you have these rogue owners that aren't playing ball. It's not the way to run a team. It's not the way to run a league. Is this harbinger of troubles to come with New Orleans? Now they're just going to let Chris Paul go in free agency, or they're going to get more value for him at the trading deadline? It doesn't make any sense what's happening. And Dan Gilbert, who's proven himself to be a fool, just did it again.
Yeah, because keep in mind, Paul would be a free agent at the end of this year. The chances of New Orleans keeping him, almost zero. Just not going to have the pockets to be able to do that. So this collective strong front that the owners kept through this entire lockout and through all the negotiations now becomes a little bit of a house of cards. Yes, so far this deal has been voided by Stern, but now an appeal has been filed. So now these are going to be owners against owners. The Lakers are allowed to say, well, wait a minute, Mr. Gilbert, who are you to say that we can't do this? New Orleans, of all Gilbert's part owners, supposed to say, wait a minute, this rebuilds us. This makes us viable. We actually have a roster that we can do something with, because if you don't make this trade in New Orleans, what else are you going to do? So let's say that it'll be fascinating over the course of the weekend to see how the appeal process goes. Is that unity that the owners showed up to this point something that we might see collapse?
Yeah, we're going to have a whole case of insider six-packs next week dealing with some of these NBA issues, obviously, with signings and trades and all that going on starting today. Next week, going to be chock-heavy with NBA news and notes. But for the weekend, man, we've gotten some great emails. I apologize. Today's show is jam-packed. On Monday, we're going to do a full mailbag. Answer, I don't know, six, eight, however many questions we got how many good questions we got. So keep those emails coming in.
We're still short on gift certificates.
And, of course, your question was guaranteed to go on air if you send Malinsky a gift certificate for something. Sportsday@covers.com is email address. Again, sportsday@covers.com. You can send us messages via Twitter and questions via Twitter. Follow and keep all the news right there on your little handheld at Vegas Sports Day. And, of course, you know, I say get involved in the community. Let's get, I know you guys are in the forums every day posting away. Let's get this Covers thread, or this Vegas Sports Day thread, blowing up a little bit. Come on, guys. Covers.com/posting forum. Well, when we come back, it's going to be college hoops. It's going to be college football. It's going to be NFL. Our Insider Six-Pack covers the full board.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Courtney Leone, this is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Yeah, let's crack open a cold one. It's time for our insider. Actually, let's crack open six cold ones, because it's time for the insider. Six pack, but one at a time. We're going to start with the ESPN2 national TV game tonight in college hoops. Richmond and VCU. We all remember the VCU Rams. Shaka Smart's team went all the way to the Final Four last year. And note the schedule change on this one. Richmond and VCU, they're meeting tonight instead of tomorrow. This was a game that was moved up for ESPN purposes. 8 o'clock Eastern time tip-off. 5 Eastern time. It's 5 o'clock Vegas time tip-off. Here's a conundrum. Now, ordinarily, we've been talking about this all week, the type of games where maybe the home court doesn't mean as much. Of course, Richmond and VCU both share the same city. But, you know, short cross-town bus ride for the Spiders tonight. But the Rams have won and covered each of the last four meetings in this series at the Siegel Center. Could the reason be because the Rams, man, have a really strong home court edge? They sell out basically every game, even with opposing fans able to get to the arena easily and shop for tickets. First two VCU home games this year are both listed as 7,617 fans. Yes, that's at full capacity. You have to think it'll be the same for a matchup against our in-city rival tonight.
Tough times for Larry Kostowiak trying to rebuild the Utah program. We talked earlier this week about Josh Watkins, a leading scorer, leading assist man, being suspended. Led to the worst defeat ever for them on their home court in the Huntsman Center. Cal State Fullerton, nondescript team from the West Coast, went in and waxed them 81-50, beat them 44-16 on the boards. If you're Kostowiak, you don't want Watkins back. It's a kid who came to camp 30 pounds overweight, he's had a couple of incidents already, but guess what? He's back now. Because who do you play Saturday? Brigham Young. Your biggest rival. If you just suffered your biggest home loss ever, you can't afford that embarrassment. So it could be for the long-term purposes of the program, they have to take a step backwards by putting him back on the team. But for short-term, if you get annihilated at home by your biggest rival, and we wouldn't be surprised tomorrow if there were more BYU fans than Utah fans there. It's a short drive from Provo up to Salt Lake. I think this is a move Kostowiak may regret later. But for the short-term scoreboard, Watkins is back.
Well, there's a new sheriff in town. That's right, in Illinois. It's going to be Tim Beckman, the Toledo Rockets former head coach. He spent 3 years at Toledo, in which he seemed to have the Rockets going in the right direction, including a trip to the Military Bowl this year against Air Force on December 28th. The official announcement's likely to come later today, but first reports are that Beckman will not be Toledo's coach for that bowl game. We hope to get that cleared up for you 100% on Monday's show. Although Beckman came to Toledo after being the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma State, it was the Rockets' offense that keyed their remarkable season this year. The defense allowing 63 points in back-to-back games in a memorable November cycle. Cycle where we were able to cash a couple of over tickets in those contests. Beckman, defensive mindset, offense first team this year, now moving to the Illini.
Did a postmortem on the show this week talking about the Houston quarterback situation. Well, it doesn't get helped at all by the fact that they may be without Andre Johnson this week. Johnson missed six games earlier this season with a strained right hamstring. Now it's the left hamstring. It's likely to keep him out of Sunday's game. That sort of muddles that quarterback situation even more. The guy they certainly needed on the field to help T.J. Yates stretch opposing defenses just a little bit. Now we're going to see a lot of guys in the box on Sunday to stop Arian Foster. The guy who may not be that bad off though, Brian Cushing. He hasn't practiced yet this week. Rib and knee injuries both. They're saying that's just more of a recuperative process for him. They think he can go out and play okay on Sunday. Could be practicing right now if he had to. They think it's just to get him as fresh as possible. Cushing will play Sunday.
Yeah, we haven't seen lines for most of the week when it comes to the Lions-Vikings matchup. Lines really popping up mostly today in that ballgame. Detroit around minus 10, 46.5 the total in that ballgame. But there are still a lot of questions about what's going to happen with Minnesota and their skill position talent this weekend. Adrian Peterson returned to practice yesterday for the first time since suffering that high ankle sprain against Oakland back in game number 11. But instead of offering a precise measurement, head coach Leslie Frazier gave us this, quote, "He's headed in the right direction, far more improved than he was a week ago. Don't know yet if Peterson's going to be good enough to go on Sunday." Meanwhile, Christian Ponder missed his second straight practice because of a hip pointer suffered versus Denver last weekend. Joe Webb, the former Alabama-Birmingham superstar dual-threat QB, a guy who may remind some of you out there of a kid named Tebow playing for Denver these days. He has that same type of skill set, the run-pass dual threat. Webb has been taking all the snaps with the first-string offense in practice this week, and if Ponder cannot go today in practice, we can expect Webb to be tabbed as the starter for Sunday. Given Detroit's pass rush, throwing Ponder out there with a hip pointer may not be the best move for Minnesota. Don't be shocked if Joe Webb gets the start.
So you're coming into Vegas this weekend, want to get all your parlay card action in. You want to include the Monday night game because you're going to be leaving on Sunday to go home. Probably going to be out of luck at most places. Still not seeing many people deal the St. Louis-Seattle game. The St. Louis quarterback situation completely up in the air. We may not know till we get to money time on Monday how this is going to play out. So both Sam Bradford and A.J. Feely haven't practiced this week. Bradford with the ankle, Feely with the fractured thumb. There is a chance we might not see Feely again this year. They signed Kellen Clemens earlier this week after Clemens was put on waivers by Houston. Now, even though Clemens is now with St. Louis, it's been Tom Brandstetter, the kid from Fresno State, taking all of the snaps with the first-team offense in practice this week. I think the decision they have to make is it better to shut Bradford down the rest of the season so that he can come back healthy instead of risking perhaps more injury with a guy who's not playing with his full mobility? There is an integrity aspect where Seattle is still lingering on the outside of the playoff chase, possibly a wild card. It's unlikely, but you sort of owe it to the NFL to put your best foot out there on Monday night for television, and because Seattle's still in a race, if this were a Sunday afternoon game, a little more nondescript, we wouldn't have been surprised if they would have already ruled Bradford out.
Yeah, and when we talk about Tom Brandstetter, the kid from Fresno, at no point in his collegiate career did he look anything like an NFL starting quarterback. If he gets the go, we'll probably have something to say about that.
There were some times he didn't look like a college starting quarterback.
He was rough. You know, you wonder why Pat Hill's job security is what it is right now. You know, Brandstetter certainly deserves some of the blame. When we come back, we're going to put all of the news and stats to work for you. It's Money Time, NCAA edition.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start in Landover, Maryland, where a Navy is a 7-point favorite over Army tomorrow. Total 57.5. Dave, when you used to do the Stardust line, I swear I heard you go 40 minutes one time on Army-Navy. Just you. Can you cut it down a little bit today?
Oh, we sure can, but remember, back in the day, we had 2 hours to fill. When you've got one game, you've got 2 hours. When we did talk about it, there was a memorable stretch back in the 90s. While we did do one extra long take on it, then again, 4 years in a row, this series went down to the final drive, and a couple of them decided by incredible goal line stands. So what happens when we have two even teams getting after each other? But we haven't seen that in a while. Now the series has been dominated by Navy, 9 straight wins by 12 points or more. The first two matchups with Rich Ellerson decided by 14 points. The odds makers have made quite a shift now. Ordinarily, when one team beats the other 9 straight by 12 or more, you don't see a line get adjusted down to 7. But we can see some of the merit by it. It's been a disappointing season for Navy. There are some matchup elements that actually put Army in the game. Army led the nation in rushing this year. That Navy defense, number 81 against the rush, number 116 out of 120 in tackles for loss. It looks like for the first time, Army might be able to compete at the line, first time in a long while, Army might be able to compete at the line of scrimmage, maybe control the flow a little bit. But at the 7, are they offering us enough to bet on these Army improvements?
Yeah, I mean, my powering number for the game was exactly 7. So when I'm looking for an edge in that department, I had none. You know, then you start looking at these two teams. Is Navy the type of squad I'm going to lay a touchdown with? You know, I love, I talked about it on the show yesterday, how much you love Navy in that road underdog role. Not so much as home chalk, and that's has been, you know, the Paul Johnson era, before the Paul Johnson era, the Charlie Weatherby era. You can go back a long way, and obviously in the new Matatolo era, this is not the role that I tend to look to support Navy in. And Navy wasn't very good this year. I mean, they showed it to us on a handful of occasions. Games, the San Jose game certainly stands out late in the season where they had a chance to clinch bowl eligibility, to put themselves in position to clinch bowl eligibility, came up short in that contest. It just wasn't a special season, the most disappointing season for Navy in quite some time. But at the same time, Dave, you talked about the series dominance, and it's absolute dominance for Navy over Army for the better part of the last decade. And when you have that type of dominance, it's not like Army's so good, you're like, oh, yeah, this is their year. They're going to get them. Army wasn't very good this year either. So for me, you know, when my power rating number is exactly where the line is, you know, maybe you take a look at the under, but I don't know that I trust either one of these two defenses, not even a little bit. So it's a pass for me, a slight lean towards the under.
We're going to have a little bit of the under in our pockets, and here's why this would work. These teams do know each other's playbooks inside out because they run a lot of the same stuff. Now, at the academies, you don't have a lot of speed players, so you're not going to have a lot of home run plays. So even though the defenses are weak, the touchdowns are going to come on long drives. Time-consuming. You don't mind giving up an 8-minute touchdown drive. That's not bad at all. You certainly never mind giving up a 3 at the end of a long drive. So don't play the under thinking the teams are going to stop each other. Play the under thinking that the clock is working for you. Mm-hmm. And the idea is, can they get to 58 before 60 minutes are up? No, I don't think we see enough quick points in this one. We'll have some under in our pockets.
Let's take a look at some of the games for tomorrow in college basketball. We have some look-ahead line, the projected numbers. These numbers obviously subject to change when the marketplace actually starts to explode later on this afternoon. But we do have the look-ahead lines for you here. Let's start in Madison Square Garden, where Duke is a 9-point favorite over the resurgent, I don't know what to call Washington. Washington team is playing pretty good right now, I guess is the way I'll describe them.
Once upon a time, this would look like Duke to us. You would think there was a coaching edge with Mike Krzyzewski over Lorenzo Romar. And the fact that Duke has played a fair amount in Madison Square Garden, and it would be a tougher trip for Washington. But as we noted earlier in the week in a Money Time segment, Washington kids have been here all week, already played a good game and a real good game against Marquette earlier, one that went to the final possession. Also picking up a couple of academic credits. They went to see the show Memphis, writing papers about it. If you're going to do it right. But it does mean that they're kind of relaxed and they're settled in. You've been in the same hotel room all week. You've been practicing in the same spot all week. You've already played in the garden. That lack of familiarity, not an issue. And I'm not sure it's a mismatch on the court anymore. Duke is good, but limited. This is the weakest Duke defensive team we've seen in quite some time. I'll tell you what's interesting about Duke also now. When you look at the games that have been priced competitively, they've had four games where they've only been a single-digit favorite. They got out-rebounded in all four. A collective minus 21 boards in those games. Mm-hmm. If you look at the way Washington hits the boards, out-rebounded their opponents in double figures four times already. Out-rebounded Marquette by 13. I'm not sure anyone else is going to do that this year. This might be a sleeper spot for Washington to actually take the game right to Duke instead of being intimidated.
So let me get this straight. The Washington kids got to go see a play and then write a paper about it and then get two college credits. Why don't we do that here in Vegas? You know, you can go to a burlesque show, one of the topless shows, you know, write the 250 words on it. And make it two pages, 500 words on it. And, you know, about your experience and give out some course credit for that.
When Tarkanian was coach, they did that. So that's why they were so good.
I'm sure they did it a lot. But, you know, I'm sure perhaps the Dave Rice era, somewhere down the line, we'll have a little bit of that. But for the purposes of this matchup here, I'm with you 100%, Dave. I think that Washington has the potential to be a live dog in this one. The situation sets up right for the Huskies, the size edge, the depth edge. And one thing that Duke is going to do when they play a team like Washington, Duke's very comfortable playing up-tempo and you know, more so even than the slowdown game. And Lorenzo Romar's teams, all they want to do is get up and down the court. They like to pick up the pace. And I think that's going to work in their favor against a Duke team that's going to be very comfortable running and gunning with them. Maybe the over in this one may be worth a look as well.
I guess not only do we have that familiarity with Madison Square Garden, but again, we talk about thinking about the little things in the back of your mind that you might not think of when projecting matchups. Go back to last year's NCAA tournament. Washington gets eliminated by North Carolina in a very close game. There's that confidence factor now that, you know what, we can compete with this type of team. Also shows you what happens when Washington can play up-tempo. They're never going to get dominated by anyone when it's up-tempo. Yet Romar's players maybe not as good as Duke's players. They weren't as good as North Carolina's players. But the one thing we do like about Romar's team, a lot of times when teams play fast, they also play soft. Washington doesn't. They play fast and hard. First time a loose ball hits the court tomorrow, you're going to see Washington players diving after it. You like that when you're taking big points.
Let's stay in Madison Square Garden for another TV matchup tomorrow. We're talking about the Pitt Panthers. -3.5 against Oklahoma State at MSG.
Over the course of time on this show, you're going to see us talking about Pittsburgh a lot in the Garden because there's a lot going on here. There's a big history. 26-13 in the Garden over the last 10 years. Some things tie in here. Jamie Dixon, the Pitt coach, is born in the Bronx. He recruits well out of that area. Dixon likes to play a very tough, physical style of defense. If you want to play that, where are you going to find your best talent? In that New York metro area. So let's look at this Pitt roster. Now, Trayvon Woodall will not play tomorrow because of an injury. He's from Brooklyn. Ashton Gibbs, Scotch Plains, New Jersey. J.J. Moore, he's from Brentwood. Isaiah Epps from Plainfield, New Jersey. Dante Taylor, he's from Greenburg. So they're getting those tough kids from around the New York area. They're playing with that mindset. So a couple of things happen. One is these are homecoming games for these kids when they go back there. You get friends and family there. But also, a lot of times in New York, you get neutral basketball fans. And who do they start rooting for when they didn't have anyone to root for coming in? Kids who play tough, kids who play smart. The New York crowd has sort of adopted Pittsburgh. It's like their number two team behind St. John's. So when Pitt takes the court tomorrow, this is not Pitt on a neutral. This is Pitt in a place where they've been very, very comfortable in the past.
Well, yeah, I mean, 26-13 straight up on this floor, dating back, since 2000, 2001. They've been to the Big East title game all those times. They've been on a lot of great runs and had great memories and a fair bit of confidence playing at MSG. I'm not so sure Okie State brings that same level of confidence. They have the familiarity. You know, they lost to Stanford here and Virginia Tech over Thanksgiving weekend. But the fact that they lost those games, you know, I mean, maybe a chip on their shoulder. I don't think Pitt's necessarily that good. Pitt's good. Don't get me wrong. Pitt's going to be a 20-win team, a 22-win team, maybe a 25-win team. They'll have a high seed come big dance time. Pitt's not garbage, but Pitt's not a juggernaut. You know, Pitt is not a national title contender this year. And when you look at a team like Okie State, they're going to fight. They're going to scratch. They're going to claw every bit as much as the Panthers will. They give them a fighting chance in this one.
Let's head out to the Honda Center in Anaheim tomorrow night. It's going to be University of Pennsylvania at UCLA. Again, the Bruins not having Pauley Pavilion available as their home court this year. Early projections, UCLA about a 6.5-point favorite. When we tease at the top of the show the homecoming elements, it's a particular reason why Penn wanted to play this game. And we see Ivy League teams do this every once in a while. They've got a good cluster of players right from this area. So this is part of the reward to these kids for coming in, sometimes even using it as an inducement. If you come play for us, we'll get you a game back at UCLA. Think specifically about a sophomore like Miles Cartwright, one of the best players Penn has brought in a long time. Cartwright could have gone to a lot of places, ended up going back to the University of Pennsylvania. So look at this roster. Tyler Bernardini, double-figure scorer, second-leading rebounder. He's from Carlsbad. As we mentioned, Cartwright, he's from Van Nuys. And even off the bench, freshman Cameron Crocker, see a lot of playing time. He's from Cyprus, playing 10 minutes a game. There's three kids who are going to go out there and play pretty hard. And Teddy, it sounds like these kids are up for it.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, you look at the quotes. Here's what Bernardini, who's going to be playing in front of his grandparents for the first time at the collegiate level. Here's his quote, quote, "I couldn't be more excited." Yeah, me neither. Here's Cartwright from Van Nuys. Quote, "I feel like there might be more Penn fans than UCLA fans. I can't even downplay and say that it's not a big game." And he may be right. I mean, the Bruins drew a little bit at Pauley. They haven't drawn anything outside of Pauley right now. This season, it's got big red flags all over the place when it comes to UCLA right now. Let's talk once again. We have to revisit the Reeve Nelson situation because Reeve Nelson should have been kicked off the team by now. You know, I mean, it's pretty clear there are practice issues, there are off-court issues, there are issues with the coach. The guy's not working out for the program. And when you have the multiple suspensions and a guy doesn't get kicked off the team, what's that telling you? What's Ben Howland, if we try to sift through the tea leaves here, what's he saying? He's saying, guess what? My team stinks. I really need this guy. So even though he's supposed to get kicked off the team, it hasn't happened yet. And that tells us a lot about the UCLA thought process and Ben Howland's thought process. He tries to cobble together something from a very disappointing ball club.
So when Ben Howland says my team stinks, and again, we're making that up for him, we believe he's right. His team does stink. It's not that they've been an underachiever. They're just simply not that good. So how far can we go with Penn here? Let's go all the way. Penn, as our NCAA play of the day for Saturday, a team that's already played Temple, they played Pittsburgh, they played Villanova, they've been up against some tough competition. There's no culture shock here. Having friends and family in the arena with just a sparse UCLA following doesn't mean much of a disadvantage at all. Don't be surprised if Penn maybe even pulls the outright upset over UCLA.
And yes, that's the Quakers, not the Quackers. They're not from Oregon. The Quakers, the look-ahead line for that game, +6.5. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the NFL as Money Time continues.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
It's Money Time, NFL edition, and let's go to Miami. Dolphins, -3, total 45.5 against the Philadelphia Eagles. And all of a sudden, hey, guess what? Philly got healthy. They got Michael Vick back in the lineup this week. They got Dominique Rodgers-Camarte back in the lineup this week. Jeremy Maclin back in the lineup. The question is going to make a difference.
If you watched the show earlier this week, and if you didn't, shame on you.
Yeah.
We did a postmortem on just how good Miami's been over the last five games. They've outscored the opposition by 85 points. The best Green Bay stretch all year, they've only outscored the opposition by 83 points over five games. So that means that's the best 20-quarter consecutive stretch any football team has played. The Miami momentum continues here. Looks like they have some matchup advantages. You know, Michael Vick will be back, but Miami has a defense that can run. They're not going to lose containment that much. You've got a lot of enthusiasm on offense. Look at how Reggie Bush is that now that he's getting to run the ball a little bit more and play a bigger role, and look at how soft that Philadelphia defensive front has been. So, okay, the Eagles are healthier, but are they really any better? Are the Eagles' mindset just a little bit too far out of sync to get back to where they were earlier in the year?
Well, I mean, the one thing with Philadelphia, we have to respect the fact that Andy Reid, 7-2 straight up, 8-1 against the spread as an underdog after December 1st over the last six seasons. So this has been Philadelphia's role. They've been a great road team over the years, and they've put money in my pockets many times in seasons past in this road underdog role. And when we think back to what the projected number for this game was, oh, I don't know, say 2 months ago or 3 months ago, you're talking about Philly laying a field goal, Philly laying four, Philly laying five, and now it's Miami who's laying the points. But at the same time, Dolphins are a lot better now than they were a month ago, significantly better, and the Eagles significantly worse.
So when you think about trends, and we always try to break this down for you, working the logic inside of them, those read numbers are awfully good late in season as an underdog. Shows the ability to make adjustments. But now here's your conundrum. Most of those games are a Philadelphia team in playoff contention. When you're in playoff contention, you stay after practice, you go to the weight room, you're a coach, you're up later watching films. Is that the same discipline and focus Philadelphia is bringing right now? This is going to be a good game for us to watch, because if we see Philadelphia show any spark or heart at all, there may be a few chances before the year's out to bet a team that still has pretty good talent. This just isn't the week to do that.
Let's go to Charlotte, where the Atlanta Falcons -3, a total of 47 against the Panthers. And this is a Falcons team last week. They had every chance to beat the Texans. They had not one but two defensive touchdowns overturned on penalties that weren't necessarily related to what was going on at the field at that time. They had drop passes galore. I think everybody on the team dropped a pass in that contest, including the potential game-tying touchdown late in the fourth quarter right there in the end zone, in his hands. Hold on to the freaking ball. Couldn't do it. So the question is, Falcons bounce back? Or is Atlanta another one of these teams that maybe just doesn't have what it takes in 2011. The magic not there for Atlanta the way it was in 2010. What's your first take, Dave?
Well, if you watched yesterday's show, and again, if you didn't, shame on you. When we went inside the numbers, we talked about how Mike Smith has been so good at bouncing back off of losses. 14-2-2 straight up. We say 14-2-2 because two games went to overtime. 14-4 against the spread. The real key, though, is those 18 games, they beat the spread by 192 points. That's real significant. When you're beating the spread over 10 points a game on that big of a sample, you're doing things right, making the proper adjustments. So now let's get to the chess match element here. Start of the show, we alluded to the idea of gravity coming into play. So many times when Cam Newton was playing well in September and October, we follow the quotes of defensive players and defensive coach saying, wow, we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know he was that good. We didn't know he was that accurate. Now things change. Here's the first, second look for any defense against Newton. And here's where it gets interesting. Who defended him the best of anyone the first time around? The Atlanta Falcons. Lowest passer rating of the season, three interceptions, no touchdown passes, and a 14-point Atlanta home win. If you have that kind of game plan against Newton the first time around, Teddy, could we expect the game plan to be just as good or maybe even better this time?
I mean, there's no reason to think that we wouldn't, but at the same time, here's a Panthers team, playing with confidence and no momentum. I know they have a losing record. I know it's been something of a disappointing season, really. And not a disappointing season if you consider the fact that Carolina was ranked number 32 out of 32 NFL teams coming into the season from a power rating perspective and from a season wins perspective here in Las Vegas. But the bottom line for this Panther team, back-to-back road wins. Back-to-back road wins. And again, we're not talking about stepping up in class. They beat Tampa and Indy. But there is some positive momentum here. I think the Panthers bring more to the table than most late-season losing teams. But there's certainly some matchup issues for Carolina. They're not a very good defensive team. We saw it even last week in a blowout win over Tampa Bay, where the defense struggled against a bottom-tier backup quarterback like Josh Johnson. Michael Turner ran the ball all over Carolina in the first meeting. 27 carries, 139 yards, two tutties. And there's no reason to think that Michael the Burner Turner won't be able to do it again.
Set out to the Mile High City in Denver, where the Broncos are -3.5, 35.5 over Chicago earlier in the week. We talk about issues that both the teams, you know, we shouldn't be having to rehash all this for you. So, and again, all these are available by download. So you can go back and see what you missed by not watching the first time around. We talked about so many things that Denver's done right beyond Tim Tebow. Willis McGahee having his career rejuvenated. What Von Miller has meant to that defense, along with a healthy Elvis Dumervil. And John Fox, and just that stability to get the defense playing better, to have the whole team functioning as a unit. A lot of good things happening in Denver. And maybe here's the biggest key of all. This could be a dynamic home field down the stretch. When you're in playoff contention in Denver, not only is there the altitude, when you add the crowd in at that stadium, that's big. Because keep in mind, all these things Denver's been doing lately, mostly on the road. Four of the last five games were on the road. We might see one of the more dynamic crowds of the whole NFL season in Denver this Sunday.
Yeah, and this is the first time that the betting markets opened Denver as a favorite. Was it week one against Oakland? I mean, it's been at least 10 weeks that the Broncos actually closed against Miami as chalk, but that was after all the money poured in on the Broncos with the Tim Tebow hype that was going on at the time. So a different role than we're used to seeing the Broncos in, but at the same time, you know, the Bears are a mess right now. We saw it last week. They gave up one play, a Hail Mary, where the guy actually knocked it down into somebody else's hands for the touchdown, and they lose the game at home 7-3. Caleb Haney, he's a mess. Marion Barber, going to be taking the majority of carries for Chicago. He's no Matt Forte. He can't get to the outside. He's not going to burn you with his speed. And that really gives Von Miller and Elvis Dumervil an extra edge rushing a backup quarterback. Denver's pressure likely to be real. And Von Miller's quote, he missed last week, and remember how much the Broncos defense missed him against Minnesota, quote, "I definitely feel confident enough to go play."
Now for the nightcap on Sunday, we're going to go to Jerry Jones, big expensive stadium in Dallas, where the Cowboys, -3.5, over under 49 against the Giants. We talked earlier in the week, again, about the endgame problems that the Cowboys had when they should have been able to put Arizona away on Sunday. Now, who did that impact an awful lot? The Giants. Giants suffered a crushing loss at home against the Packers that if the Cowboys had finished properly, if Jason Garrett had used his timeouts a little better, might have been the death knell for the Giants for this season. That little glitch at the end of the game for the Cowboys actually has the Giants alive again, brings a little different spark to this game than we may have otherwise seen.
And all we've seen from these two teams when they've met in every recent meeting, we've seen shootouts. The last 2 years, 64 points, 55 points, 76 points, 53 points. Five times a team has gotten more than 420 yards of total offense in those ball games. So these are two potent attacks. The Giants have their issues at running back right now. Ahmad Bradshaw, he hasn't been practicing again this week, trying to rest a fracture in his foot. He was only marginally effective in action last week. Brandon Jacobs, he sat out all week with a hamstring injury. Don't know if he's going to be able to go. But the Giants, again, 35 points last week against Green Bay. This offense can move the football. As long as they don't turn the ball over, they move the football. Dallas, without Miles Austin, you know, the offense isn't quite as explosive, but it's not like Tony Romo lacks for weapons. It's not like the Cowboys don't have a history of success moving the ball up and down the field against the Giants. So, and this Giants defense, again, they're going to be missing Kenny Phillips this week again. And here's coordinator Perry Fuel talking about all the injuries they've suffered on the defense side of the ball. He said, quote, "It definitely disrupts your continuity. You don't expand as much as you'd like to, and you try to make sure you're fundamentally sound in what you do." No surprise here. If this game, another relatively high-scoring affair.
These become the most difficult games to handicap because you got two fragile teams, and we want to bet on which one brings the most stability. So if you remember back to last week's show, well, we noted on an Inside the Number segment how Tom Coughlin's teams have been fading badly at the end of the year. Can you necessarily trust Coughlin? But can you trust Jason Garrett? And also, when you go beyond the coaches, look at the two quarterbacks and the mistake-prone elements of Tony Romo and Eli Manning both. Is there a stable element here that we can trust? No, there isn't. Might be a lot of entertainment, potentially a lot of big plays made in this game, but we've got somewhere better to go on Sunday if you want to stick some money in your pocket.
Oh, yes, we do. It's time for the Vegas Sports Day Play of the Day for NFL Sunday. We're going to take a look at the Denver Broncos, -3.5. You can shop around and find a 3 on this game, but you have to lay heavy juice to do it. The math says -3.5 even money is a heck of a lot better of a bet than -3, -130. We'll lay the hook here. I think Denver wins by more than 3.5. Take it with Denver. That's a Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And that's going to wrap up another week of shows, guys. Thank you. Thank you, thank you for watching. Dave, you weren't a broken record. You were a scratch CD. Watch the show every day is what he's saying. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Email everyone. Tweet everyone. And come back again on Monday. Enjoy the games between now and then, and good luck.